This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to a reading of The Braille Monitor, a magazine published by the National Federation of the Blind. Material is selected with the interests of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. This program is funded in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. This is Lavender, and our program today will bring you articles from the July 2026 issue. Let's get started! From the back seat to the driver's seat, a Federation journey with Waymo by Jordan Moon. And there's a picture of Jordan Moon, and it says that he's a mentor. And there's a picture, so there's a picture of him and a student getting ready to begin their STEM experiment. We have all heard the jokes. What are you, blind? Even a blind person can see that. Blind people driving? Ha! Absolutely not. Even in casual conversation, blindness and driving are treated as the ultimate contradiction. The joke that writes itself. Growing up, I laughed along because I desperately wanted to fit in. Like many blind people, I internalized the idea that not driving meant not being fully independent. Drivers got licenses. We got IDs. Even compliments carried low expectations. Wow, you get around so well. Or, I honestly don't know what I'd do if I couldn't drive. I spent years trying to speed past those stereotypes. I played sports, sat inches from televisions to play video games, some involving race cars, and comments on clothes and appearances as though I could see them perfectly. But when my friends started getting driver's licenses, I hit the one barrier. I could not fake my way around. Pumping the brakes on the road of expectations. Throughout my childhood and young adulthood, the inability to drive seemed to shadow every major life decision. An orientation and mobility instructor once told me a blind person could never teach cane travel. How would I pick up my students and drive them around, let alone monitor them? By the way, that is not a true statement, just so you know. As a blind person who has met a blind person who teaches travel, that's not a true statement. Watching friends and eventually my younger brothers get licenses only reinforced the feeling that adulthood itself depended on driving. Even at Arizona State University, forks up, I quietly limited my own ambitions. I convinced myself print journalism was my only option because I could not drive to story locations or operate a camera. During job interviews, employers would ask how I planned to get around without a car, and I began wondering whether society's low expectations were right after all. This self-doubt led to severe depression. The Federation drives the change. It was not until I met the National Federation of the Blind in 2014 that I realized the low expectations society had placed on me did not have to be my own. Maybe there was a way I did not have to let my blindness define me, but it still seemed almost too good to be true. One of the first things that helped me embrace Federation philosophy was learning about the Blind Driver Challenge. This initiative emphasized that lack of eyesight was not the reason that blind people could not drive. The problem was that technology had never been developed to give blind people the information through our other senses to operate a motor vehicle safely and independently. In 2004, then, Federation President Dr. Mark Maurer challenged university engineering teams to design a vehicle a blind person could independently operate. 7 years later, on January 29th, 2011, Mark Riccobono, who would succeed Dr. Maurer as president in 2014, independently drove at the Daytona International Speedway, navigating obstacles randomly thrown into his path, and even passing another vehicle along the course. That demonstration changed how the world viewed blind people in transportation technology. It also helped to ensure that blind people were included in conversations about autonomous vehicles from the very beginning. Uber and Lyft, a new lane, but not our road. Life has a funny way of presenting something only when you are ready for it. So it is fitting that in the same year I was introduced to the Federation and the story of the Blind Driver Challenge, transportation for blind people changed in a meaningful way. 2014 was the year blind people discovered the power of rideshare services. Uber and Lyft shook up the transportation arena like an earthquake. No more did we have to wait for a taxi that may or may not show up. No more were we forced to, as here in Arizona, ride a bus in 100-degree heat to go 2 miles up the street simply because we were not willing to pay the $15 for a cab. Now, blind people had the power to request a ride from their phone and go directly to their destination. At the time, blind people were thrilled. I distinctly remember a friend of mine taking an Uber to a random place just because he was so glad he could. For years, Uber and Lyft have been great resources for our community and have participated in many Federation events, including national and state conventions. Someone looking in from the outside might assume that since Uber and Lyft arrived, life for blind people is all good now. Of course, we in the Federation know differently. Even though transportation got easier, defending our right to ride the way we want and need to definitely got harder. Rideshare services introduced new barriers. How do we find our vehicles? Is the app accessible? Would a driver really be okay transporting a family with kids? But number one on this list always is the service animal concern. Have a guide dog and want to take a rideshare? You may or may not have a driver deny you. Of course, the Federation does not sit idle in the face of discrimination. We held town halls, built tracking and reporting mechanisms, and rallied at Uber and Lyft headquarters. As my Federation philosophy developed, it became clearer and clearer that good enough is not good enough. A ride into the future. It was just 2 years after I became a Federationist that I was first introduced to Waymo. Living in Arizona has its perks. Sunny for most of the year, no daylight saving time, beautiful scenery, and tons of tech innovation. In 2016, Waymo, operated by Alphabet, the parent company of Google, was seeking feedback from blind people to test this emerging technology. Somehow, I was invited to participate. I vividly remember sitting in the back seat of that car as it drove and being completely shocked. Wow! At that time, state law still required a licensed driver to be present in the front seat. So, in the back of my mind, a question lingered. Was this a truly autonomous ride, or was I being fooled? Being the skeptic I was, I asked the driver to prove the car was really driving itself. It was only when we were making a turn and the driver grabbed my hand with both of his, showing me his hands were completely off the wheel, that the reality hit me. The car not only made a perfect turn on its own, it merged into the center lane more smoothly than anything I had ever experienced. Something became very clear that day. It was not just that this technology was amazing. What became even clearer was that if it were not for the Federation and the work we put into making sure this technology was inclusive, I would not have been in that car at all. And yet, doubt crept in. There is no way this becomes mainstream, I thought. In those early days, it was widely held that someone capable of manual control needed to be present at all times. Waymo launched its early rider program in the Phoenix area in 2017, began offering paid rides in late 2019, and on October 8th, 2020, officially opened its fully driverless service to the public. For some, even then, it was hard to trust their lives to a robot. Mapping the route, how we got here between 2022 and 2024, Waymo rapidly expanded, opening to the public in San Francisco and Los Angeles, and significantly widening its Phoenix coverage. In 2025, Waymo extended service to freeways in Phoenix, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Soon after, Waymo partnered with Uber to offer autonomous rides in Austin and Atlanta. As of May of 2026, Waymo operates paid commercial service in Phoenix, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Austin, Atlanta, and Miami, with announced expansion into cities including Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Orlando, Nashville, Detroit, Las Vegas, Washington, D.C., and San Diego, expected throughout 2026. London and Tokyo are in active testing phases. The scale is staggering. Waymo now completes more than 500,000 paid rides every week. Waymo is not the only player in the industry, but it is the farthest along in providing commercial rides and has worked closely with the National Federation of the Blind, hence this article's focus on its service. To understand where we are, it helps to know the industry's framework. The levels of autonomy, the scoreboard for how much a vehicle can operate without human input, range from 0 to 5. Level 0 is full human control, what most of us grew up with. Levels 1 and 2 include common driver assistance features. Helpful, but the driver is still fully responsible. Level 3 lets the car handle basic traffic conditions, but still requires a human backup. Waymo operates at level 4. No human needed at the wheel. Though currently within defined service areas, current Waymo vehicles still have a steering wheel, mostly to satisfy existing federal regulations rather than any technical necessity. Level 5 is the ultimate destination, a vehicle that can operate in any weather, on any road, at any time, with no human required. We are not there yet, but the progress at level 4 is already changing our lives. And when level 5 does arrive, you can be sure the Federation will have its foot on the gas. No more riding shotgun. The policy fight for our driver's seat. The legal landscape for level 4 and 5 vehicles is at a major inflection point as lawmakers are finally starting to recognize the potential of this game-changing technology. The Autonomous Vehicle Accessibility Act, H.R. 419, a bipartisan bill reintroduced by Congressman Greg Stanton, DAZ, and Brian Mast, RFL, in the 11th-19th Congress, is a high priority for the Federation. President Riccobono has been vocal in his support from testifying before Congress to engaging our members in call-to-action campaigns. The bill is simple but revolutionary. It prevents states from requiring a passenger to hold a driver's license to use a level 4 or 5 autonomous vehicle. For us, this is not a small technical detail. It is a civil rights protection. Our national leadership, along with the team at Waymo, honored Congressman Stanton at Savvy Services for the Blind in Phoenix for his leadership on this legislation. As the legislative director for the NFB of Arizona, I can tell you this bill represents a vital step toward making sure the driverless future does not leave our community in the back seat. We will literally be able to sit in the driver's seat. I highly encourage everyone reading this to contact your member of Congress and urge their support. Before we know it, level 5 will be here, and we do not want to be in the slow lane. The data passes the road test. Some reading this will ask, why trust your life to a robot? One need look no further than the hard data. As of the published date of this article, across more than 170 million fully autonomous miles driven in complex urban environments, the numbers show that Waymo is significantly outperforming human drivers. Compared to human-driven vehicles in the same operating areas, Waymo has recorded a 92% reduction in serious or fatal injury crashes, an 82% drop in injury-causing crashes overall, a 92% decrease in pedestrian injury crashes, and a 96% reduction in dangerous intersection collisions. Great. For a community that has long faced the risks of distracted drivers, impaired drivers, and quiet vehicles that seem to come out of nowhere, these statistics prove that the driverless future is not just about independence. It is fundamentally about a safer way to travel. Buckle up, a briefing before the first ride. Before your initial Waymo trip, you must set up a profile in the Waymo app. If you are in Austin, where our 2026 NFB National Convention is being held, the regular Uber app gives you access to Waymo vehicles. Most features carry over, though some accessibility options may be limited in the Uber version. Important: to be matched with a nearby Waymo vehicle, you must enable autonomous vehicle rides in the Uber app. For this article, we will be riding with the full Waymo app. The Waymo app works similarly to other rideshare apps. You sign up, add payment, and request rides just like you would with Uber or Lyft. You must confirm that your destination is within the service area. Temperature controls, trip tracking, and even legroom adjustments are available right in the app. As you will soon discover, playing music and adjusting your pickup/drop-off are definitely areas that need to improve. I will not go through every detail of the app layout, since updates happen frequently and things change. The vehicles themselves make it pretty obvious you are hopping into a robo-taxi. Waymo's standard fleet is a modified Jaguar I-Pace, a sleek, all-electric SUV equipped with sensors and cameras that make it look like something out of the movie Back to the Future. Inside, it looks like a standard vehicle. Driver's seat with a steering wheel, front passenger seat, and three seats in the back. The trunk is spacious, large enough for me to fit a folding wagon and a backpack, and can be opened and closed directly from the app. When you approach, Bluetooth can automatically unlock the doors, or you can tap the unlock button. The handles pop out of the doors. Waymo is also rolling out its next generation vehicle, the Waymo Ojai, an electric van built in partnership with Chinese automaker Zeekr. I was recently invited by Waymo to ride in these. With a lower step in height, higher ceiling, basic braille labeling of door buttons and sliding doors, the Ojai is purpose-built for ride-hailing and is beginning to appear alongside the I-Pace fleet as Waymo expanded into new markets. One of the most common questions I get is about accessibility features. To Waymo's credit, and with meaningful input from the Federation, there are a solid number of helpful features to take advantage of. When your ride is confirmed, you can use the Find My Pickup feature. Holding your phone in front of your body, the app announces the direction of the vehicle and how many feet away it is. Wow. As you walk toward the car, your screen reader continuously updates your position. Once the car arrives, you can use the same feature to locate it. You can also have the car play a melody or honk its horn if you are in a noisy or crowded environment. Personally, I find the horn feature a little more reliable, though the melody is certainly cool. Live agent support is available through the app at any time before, during, or just after your trip. There are two settings you absolutely want to enable before you ride. Audio announcements, which call out street names at each turn and provide real-time updates like waiting for intersection to clear, and the feature that limits how far you need to walk to your pickup or drop-off. This second feature has been helpful, but occasionally incorrect. I have had to walk close to a quarter mile in busy areas at times. Oh, wow. This is where I want to make something very clear. Competent non-visual travel skills are not optional. They are what complete the trip. Because the Waymo is not controlled by a person, it parks where its system determines is appropriate. I have been dropped in alleys, near dumpsters, and across a busy street from destinations. Because I have confidence in my non-visual travel skills, I have always found my way. Your cane, your confidence, and your travel training matter every single ride. Mile zero, a Monday morning commute with Wanda. All of that history, the Daytona Speedway, the legislative battles, the safety data, leads to a single Monday morning in Phoenix. Let me show you what it actually feels like. Good morning, fellow Federation family member. I am glad you could join me as I take my Waymo to work at Savvy Services for the Blind's Phoenix Center. It is one of those Mondays where you can barely remember what happened to the weekend. We are heading southwest from northeast Phoenix to Central Phoenix, just outside of downtown, about 14 miles total. It is 8 o'clock a.m. My daughter, Liberty, just got picked up for school by her bus. Let's order the Waymo. I tap the work destination already saved in my phone, confirm my pickup address, and pay with Apple Pay. The app shows the car is 5 minutes away. We head outside and stand in the driveway. Holding my phone outward, I tap Find My Pickup. It says the spot is 40 feet ahead. For some reason, today's pickup is not directly in front of my house, but across the street at the neighbor's. We cross and wait at the spot where my phone buzzes with a steady vibration, letting me know I have arrived at the right place. It is a beautiful Arizona morning, one of those mornings that make you smile even when you have a million things on your mind. A notification chirp tells me the Waymo is arriving. The app shows the car is 100 feet away. We listen and hear the soft hum of an electric motor approaching from the east, not loud, something like a medium-sized industrial fan running at a gentle setting. The car pulls up directly in front of us. It is almost like it knew exactly where we were standing, you think? Because I have Bluetooth enabled, we hear the click of the door handles popping out. Go ahead and sit in the front, I tell you, since you are the guest on this trip. I take the seat behind the driver's side so you have the full front passenger experience. You find the handle and pull. Immediately, the car speaks, "Good morning, Jordan." My wife, Ashley, calls the Waymo voice Wanda. The vibe hits you right away. Front passenger seat, no driver, just a steering wheel. You cannot help but reach over toward it. The seat where the belt is buckled with no one in it. You feel the leather seats, the sleek interior, the cup holders, the tactile details outlining the buttons. You find the side controls and adjust your seat independently. You find your seatbelt and click it in. Just then, I get in and close the back door. Once both doors are closed, we hear the gentle hold-like music through the speakers, a futuristic version of what you might hear waiting on a phone call. To begin your ride, press the start button, Wanda says. I ask if you are ready. You take a few deep breaths. Are you sure about this? I remind you, I do this all the time. Just relax and enjoy the trip. My screen reader announces, start ride button. I tap it. Double tap to start ride. The moment I double tap, the hold music stops. A small chime plays and the doors lock, all in one seamless motion. It all happens that fast. You take a deep breath. We move a smooth, clean takeoff. The engine grows quieter, and that familiar low hum of an electric car takes over. The car goes straight for about 10 seconds, shifts slightly left, makes a quick right turn, then stops. We are at the entrance to my neighborhood. Waiting for intersection to clear, Wanda says. The high school across the street starts at 7:30, and morning traffic is thick. I ask you if you are okay. You do not answer. You are sitting in stunned silence. After about a minute, the car eases forward and makes a firm left turn. Proceeding on North 40th Street, Wanda says. We drive for another minute, slow, slightly, and about 30 seconds later, the car turns right. Proceeding on East Bell Road. We are cruising now, smooth, quiet, just the ambient world around us, music drifting from a nearby car, the whoosh of a bus braking. Just as you are settling in, the car drifts left. It stops, waiting for intersection to clear. Then it turns left. entering freeway, Wanda says. I did not know we were taking the freeway, you say, a definite hint of nervous energy in your voice. Live the life we want, right? I say. If most Phoenicians take the freeway to work, why shouldn't we? The car stops, inches forward, stops again, dancing with the traffic. Then the engine surges. It feels like the moment before a plane lifts off the runway. About 10 seconds later, Wanda says, proceeding on Arizona 51 South. Because you are still in awe, you put your window down. As we glide down the freeway, you hear the signature sounds, the whoosh of passing cars, the deep engine rumble of an 18-wheeler. You smell exhaust, feel wind against your face. The Arizona morning sun warms your left side. You feel that warm sun mixed with the chill of the wind, and you start to relax. So far, so good, you think. I wonder what the traffic report looks like, I say loud enough for you to hear over the noise. Why don't we turn on the radio and find out? The wind is getting to you now. So you roll up the window. The world goes quiet. I open Google Assistant and say, play the station KTAR 92.3 FM on TuneIn on Waymo. About 10 seconds later, a jingle plays and a deep voice announces, Arizona's morning news. I swipe back to the Waymo app and adjust the volume. Each swipe producing a small pop from the speakers. After a few news stories we probably should not bring up in this article, the traffic report hits. A minor fender bender on the 51 South has closed two left lanes from Glendale Avenue to McDowell Road. You ask if that is on our route. Yes, I say. Well, it wouldn't be rush hour without traffic, right, you say? Now, Wanda is really going to be put to the test. I put on some instrumental music to lighten the mood. Quietly, I am hoping we will not be late. I hate being late, but a small smile crosses my face. Here I am, a blind man on a Phoenix freeway on a Monday morning, trying to beat traffic and get to work on time. As American as apple pie in strip malls. And then, as if on cue, the traffic hits. Squeak! Beep! The sounds close in around us. The car plays its own game of red light, green light. We feel the constant stopping and going. 5 minutes pass, then suddenly a jerk right, a stop, another jerk, and we are moving freely again. Wow, you say, I think we just navigated around the traffic to find the open lane. You settle back, shoulders dropping, but just as you get comfortable again, Wanda speaks. Exiting freeway within 1 mile. Your energy shifts. I can feel it. A minute later, we slow, stop briefly for a passing car, then ease right into the exit ramp. The car's momentum shifts as we follow the curve, smooth, deliberate, like a gentle roller coaster. We complete the half circle and stop abruptly. Waiting for intersection to clear, Wanda says, I will not tell you this, but I am getting a little nervous. We are cutting close to when I want to be at the center. We wait and wait some more. I skip the track. The thumping bass is not matching the vibe right now. Simple piano notes arrive like a cold glass of water on a hot Arizona day. Refreshing. What a busy street, you say. After another minute and a half, the car moves again, proceeding on East Indian School Road. Finally! Surprisingly, Indian school is clear for this time of morning. For the first time in the trip, you're genuinely relaxed. You put your window down again. The breeze at surface street speed is manageable. The piano matches the mood. Calm, present, unhurried, you rest your arm on the window ledge. You hear the sounds of the city traffic. A bus pulling up to its stop. The chirp of a pedestrian signal. Moments like this are why we are proud to be Federationists. We refused to let the inability to drive determine where we could go. We wanted to reach places some said we never could. A car with only blind people inside, no driver, moving through the city completely on our own terms. We are going. Can I try something, you ask? Remember, we cannot touch the steering wheel, I say with a smile. No, no, you say. Let me see your phone for a second. I hand it over, honestly not sure what you are about to do. Throw it out the window, go through my messages, make a random call. About 30 seconds later, it happens. It hits us like the final words of a presidential report at a national convention. Live the life you want. Nobody can stop you. Reach for the sun and break on through. It's that song that has defined our moment since it debuted at the NFB's 75th anniversary convention in 2015. James Brown and the Cane Tips coming through Wanda's speakers. I put my window down too. We both sing at the top of our lungs. So you're blind, you'll be fine. We got good news. The song blasts as we sit at a red light. In every single doubt, every moment of believing, I would never be able to live life like everyone else. Every low expectation I ever let take root, it all goes right out that open window. The philosophy we carry in this movement, that blindness is a characteristic, not a defining quality, has never felt more real than right now. It is a good thing we can't see the faces people are making as we sing out the window, you say. Who cares? I reply. We both laugh. As the car moves forward, it turns left. Proceeding on North 7th Street, Wanda says. We turn the music down and just sit together in the moment. We proceed south for about a minute, both of us smiling until a chime plays. Almost there, Wanda says. Don't forget your phone, keys, or wallet. Your future self will thank you. As the car slows for the right turn onto Verge Lane, the significance of this whole trip fills me like the cup of coffee sitting in the cup holder. Finding a spot to pull over, we feel the car ease slightly right, pause, ease a little more. The hold music returns. We just arrived at your destination, Wanda says. Pull on the door handle to exit the vehicle. Reluctantly, you gather your things. You pull the handle, grab your cane, and step out with an energy that says you want someone to notice a blind person exiting a car with no driver. You close the door. Bye, Wanda, you say. I come around to meet you on the sidewalk. We just stand there together, breathing in the city air, taking everything in. Then the car makes a small sound. The door handles click back into place. The wheels shift and we hear the quiet crunch of the road beneath them. Just like that, Wanda drives off. We cross the small street toward the center. We made it with time to spare, I say. You are quiet. In your head, the voices of our movement are echoing. This journey brought us here, and this journey is a map for everything that comes next. We walk inside. The Monday morning buzz is all around us. Thank you, you say. No, thank you, I say. You are a Federationist, just like me. This is what we do. What's next, you ask? I am looking forward to taking that autonomous flight with you, I say. Speed bumps, what Waymo still needs to fix. As I park the metaphoric vehicle that is this article, I want to be honest. Even as we celebrate how far this technology has come, we must not settle for anything that does not fully meet our needs. The inability to independently adjust your pickup or drop-off location on the map as a blind user is frustrating. The in-car touchscreen is not accessible without sighted assistance. And the process for playing music requiring Google Assistant workarounds that sometimes work instead of seamless screen reader integration is, frankly, maddening. These are not minor inconveniences. They are design gaps that a community as engaged and vocal as ours should not have to accept as permanent features. To Waymo's credit, they are listening. The Federationist relationship with Waymo is not just ceremonial. Waymo has been a Grand Canyon level sponsor of NFB Arizona conventions, a Washington seminar sponsor for 2 consecutive years, and a sponsor of our congressional reception at Washington seminar in 2024. That relationship means we have a real place in the driver's seat, not just a ride in the back seat. We intend to use that seat. More intuitive voice control, fully accessible in-car interfaces, AI-powered conversational features, these are not wishes. They are expectations. And with the Federation's dedication and Waymo's willingness to engage, we will keep pushing until they are reality. Full speed ahead. We are not going back. Now we have choices. We do not have to worry about being turned away because of our service animals. We do not have to make small talk with a driver who keeps asking about our blindness. We do not have to apologize for our busy kids. I am reminded of something we have said many times in the Federation. We know who we are, and we will never go back. If you had asked me as a child whether a blind person could ever drive, I would have laughed at you. That pot of gold called the Federation philosophy has led me to a place I can never leave, a place of acceptance, a place where I no longer have to wonder whether life as a blind person can be a full life. It drives my work as Director of Strategic Initiatives at Savvy Services for the Blind. It is the force behind my doing something my O&M teacher said could never be done, teaching cane travel as a blind person. That boy who felt like he was always missing out is now a man who cannot wait to drive his friends and family around Phoenix whenever they visit. This philosophy is what my wife, Ashley, lead coordinator for NFB STEM 2U, and I impart our blind daughter, Liberty, our son, Lemuel, and the third child we are expecting later this year. Throughout the NFB, they will grow up knowing that blindness is not an excuse to stop reaching for your dreams. The low expectations of blindness will not be held by them. We are already planning those cross-country road trips in our level 5. That pot of gold does not have to seem too good to be true. The sense of missing out, the feeling that we cannot live like everyone else will still arise. But what would have happened if we had let those low expectations define us? We would not have had the blind driver challenge. We would not be seated at the table where the future of transportation is being shaped. The refusal to remain in the back seat is what drives our movement forward. We are not afraid to let our voices be heard. We are not afraid to show the world what blind people can do. I am reminded of the words President Rick Bono shared in his 2016 banquet address. We bond together in the National Federation of the Blind to face the uncertainty of the future, to challenge ourselves to expand the horizons and to take ownership of living the lives we want. Society's fears of blindness will not stop us. Facing our own fears will make us stronger, and the power of our unwavering love, hope, and determination will lead us through uncertainty to new heights. Let us break down the conditioned fears of others. Let us challenge ourselves to conquer the fears that stand in our way. Let us overwhelm fear with our unstoppable engine of hope. That unstoppable engine of hope has powered this movement since 1940. It is the gas our membership puts in the tank every single day. Our movement is the vehicle that empowers every one of us. When it comes to blind people and driving, we will never be backseat drivers again. Woo-hoo! This is one invention. We are steering. Let us use it as a reminder that the road ahead is wide open and we have every right to drive on it. As a blind person, I can't help but get excited. So that's why I'm acting the way I am. Next article. Federation sues government agencies over delayed web accessibility rules by Chris Danielson. It goes without saying that for blind and deafblind Americans, inaccessible websites and mobile applications are not a minor inconvenience. They are barriers to healthcare, education, employment, civil participation, and independence. That is why the National Federation of the Blind has fought for equal access to digital content for the past 2.5 decades or more. In addition to entering into direct negotiations with companies, universities, school districts, and government entities, providing resources to help businesses and governments improve accessibility through the establishment and growth of our Center for Excellence in Non-Visual Accessibility, and usually when all else fails, filing lawsuits, we fought for clear federal standards requiring government agencies and healthcare providers to make their digital services accessible. In 2024, after more than a decade of study, public comment, and rulemaking, the United States Departments of Justice and Health and Human Services finally adopted landmark regulations establishing those standards. Then, just as the first deadlines for compliance arrived in spring 2026, the current executive administration abruptly delayed them. This betrayal of the promise made to blind, deafblind, and disabled Americans was covered in last month's Braille Monitor. As we reported then, we made several attempts to forestall these actions, which government agencies had been signaling were coming. We wrote letters before the documents announcing the delays, known in government jargon as interim final rules, were even published. When they were finally issued, we submitted official comments. Our comments to the Department of Justice, DOJ, announcement were published in May, and our comments to the Health and Human Services Action follow this article. In addition, John Paré, our executive director for advocacy and policy, and our general counsel, Eve Hill, herself a former DOJ attorney, met with DOJ officials on three separate occasions, attempting to dissuade them from this course of action. But now, in adverse actions have been taken. So on May 21st, 2026, the National Federation of the Blind, represented by Democracy Forward and our longtime allies at Brown, Goldstein, and Levy with Baltimore, including Eve, filed suit in the United States District Court for the District of Maryland, challenging the agency's actions. Why litigation? Suing the government is no small matter, and some members have wondered why we are pursuing litigation at this point rather than continuing our efforts at persuasion. The answer is that, in addition to violating our rights, the interim final rules violate a federal law known as the Administrative Procedure Act. President Rick Abono explained this well in an email to a member. Here it is. Thank you for your email, for your commitment to protecting the rights of blind Americans. I agree that collecting stories and engaging in persuasion are important tools. In fact, they are tools we have been using. We have gathered stories from affected individuals, educated policymakers, engaged allies, communicated with agency officials, and worked to build public understanding of the harm these actions would cause. The National Federation of the Blind has always believed that changing hearts and minds is an important part of creating lasting progress. However, this situation presents a challenge that cannot be addressed through persuasion alone. The federal agencies involved have taken actions that we believe violate the law, specifically the Administrative Procedure Act. The issue before us is not simply whether we agree or disagree with a policy outcome. The issue is whether federal agencies followed the legally required process before taking actions that directly affect the rights and opportunities of people with disabilities. The process for challenging these agency actions provides only a limited window for legal action. If we fail to act within that window, we risk losing the opportunity to obtain meaningful relief regardless of how persuasive our arguments may be. Litigation, therefore, is not a substitute for advocacy. It is a necessary tool for preserving our rights when the government acts outside the bounds established by law. It is also important to understand that we are not suing the president. We are seeking relief from federal agencies that we believe have violated federal law. We have never held back from taking action, and that action has no connection to who is in power at the time. Our lawsuit asks the courts to require those agencies to comply with the legal procedures Congress established. This is precisely how our Constitution system is designed to function. When an agency exceeds its authority or fails to follow required procedures, the courts provide a mechanism for review. A lighter writing campaign can be valuable in influencing policy decisions and shaping future actions. What it cannot do is remedy a violation of the Administrative Procedure Act that has already occurred. Only the courts can provide the legal relief necessary to address that violation. More broadly, I do not see this as a choice between persuasion and litigation. Throughout our history, the Federation has employed every available strategy when defending the rights of blind people. We have educated the public, told our stories, built relationships with policymakers, organized grassroots action, advocated before administrative agencies, pursued legislative change, and, when necessary, sought relief through the courts. These strategies are not mutually exclusive. They reinforce one another. In fact, many of the Federation's most important victories have been achieved through a combination of public education, political advocacy, and legal action. We persuade when persuasion can solve the problem. We legislate when legislation is needed and when government agencies violate the laws in ways that threaten the rights of blind Americans. We use the legal system as well. Our responsibility is not to choose one tool over another, but to employ every appropriate tool available to protect and advance our rights. Please remember also that the campaign you are currently referring to has been underway since at least 2010. We will continue telling our stories. We will continue educating policymakers. We will continue engaging our families, friends, and communities. We will continue building public support. And when government agencies violate the law, we will continue to seek appropriate relief through the courts. I appreciate your engagement and your willingness to think critically about our strategy. I would be interested in your reflections on what I have shared here. Do you see aspects of the persuasion and relationship building work that you believe we should strengthen further alongside our legal efforts? I would welcome your thoughts. Sincerely, Mark. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. You have been listening to the Braille Monitor, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or Braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. If you have an idea for a topic to explore, please contact Audio Journal at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. When a pair of Western grebes decides it's time to mate, it's as if they know they have an audience for the performance they're about to give. On the still waters of an alkaline lake, they call loudly and approach one another. Each bird curves, then straightens its long neck gracefully. They then face each other, necks on the water's surface, their bills flipping up drops of water. If attraction prevails, they rush together and off they go across the water, running on the surface side by side. Standing straight up with necks held high and feet churning like propellers, they no longer look much like grebes, more like participants in Tchaikovsky's ballet Swan Lake. After their lengthy pas de deux, with wings extended like parallel sails, they plunge below the surface. What follows is the weed ceremony, each bird diving to pick up a beakful of soft vegetation. The grebes then stand up in the water, face one another, press tightly together, then drop the plants and preen. The whole courtship sequence may begin again at any time, building in intensity as spring progresses and the pair makes ready to start a new generation. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Ruggiero. Join me for my live weather reports, heard every weekday mornings on the Morning Report, right here on Audio Journal. Get your first forecast without waiting for a forecaster. That's the Morning Report, heard every weekday mornings from 7:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. only from Audio Journal, part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.